Hello. Welcome to the Unity Spiritual Center of Albuquerque podcast featuring the Reverend Gordon Kyler or occasionally a guest speaker. You can find us online at uscabq.org or by searching for Unity Spiritual Center Albuquerque on Facebook or YouTube. You can visit us in person at 9800 Candelaria Road Northeast in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Today's special guest is Michael Small.
So, welcome back. As we're continuing our service, this is the 11th power of the power of powers. It's the power of release or elimination. And in just in case you've missed it, this last couple of weeks, we've been studying about faith, strength, love, wisdom, the power, imagination, understanding, will, order, zeal, illumination, or elimination, and life. Again, these are our core teachings. This is not some rigid dogma that we follow, but we discovered that there's power in each of those words to help transform us, move us in a positive direction. And according to the discovery, or discover your God-given potential, I'll quote, illumination is the ability to cleanse and purify the whole being. When you look at the whole picture, you'll see the need to release and to let go in order to prepare the way for a greater good to come in. Just as you would remove weeds from a flower or a vegetable garden in order to give the desired plant room to grow, so you must remove our weed thoughts. I love that. Weed thought. I love that term. We remove that from our minds so we can prepare room for budding spiritual growth. Not only should you let go of all thoughts which are not in keeping with divine concepts, such as fear, doubt, and worry, but also relinquish thoughts, concepts, and feelings that have been outgrown through all thoughts, which are not in keeping with divine concepts. Oh, I just read that. Sorry. Excuse me. Let's go forward. That might help. So they once served a these thoughts that we had that helped us get to one point to the other, that once served a useful purpose. This is when Jesus spoke of denying thyself in order to follow him. In order to bring forth divine potential, he was not referring to a denial of identity. Rather, he was saying to withdraw thoughts and feelings from anything that does not measure up to a divine pattern. This is the demonstration of our power of release. Sorting out our thoughts and feelings and releasing all that does not belong. There's another story that I love that relates that that's important of letting go. This story is contributed to Buddha and Stephen Mitchell translation, which is, I'll quote, a man walking along the road sees a great river. It's near a bank, dangerous and frightening. Its far bank is safe. He collects sticks and foliage to make a raft and paddles across the river and reaches the other side. Now, suppose that after he reaches the other side, that other shore, he takes the raft and puts it on his head and walks on wherever he goes. Would he be using the raft in an appropriate way? No. A responsible man will realize that the raft has been very useful to him in crossing the river and arriving safely on the other shore. But once he has arrived, it is proper to leave the raft behind and walk on without it. This is using the raft appropriately. In the same way, all truth should be used to cross over. They should not be held on to once you've arrived. You should let go of even the most profound insight on the most wholesome teachings, the more so than wholesome teaching. I'm going to reread that last sentence. You should let go of even the most profound insight. How many of us love using profound words? Yes. So what are we holding on to? What are rafts? What are your rafts? Recognizing that some of us, some of our rafts has been good stuff. And yet, think about this. If every time we have to cross a stream, we're building a new raft and never letting go of the old one, eventually we're going to be walking around with a whole ton of rafts weighing us down. This is a brilliant teaching because the Buddha isn't actually asking us to let go of the wisdom. He's asking us to let go of the interpretation of that wisdom. There's a wonderful Christian mystical practice called Lixitro Divina. I think I probably pronounced that wrong, but it's the practice that involves reading the same scripture over and over again, and sometimes for years. It's also inherent in the study of the Talmud. We take one teaching and study it over and over and over again. The implication of this practice is that the first time you read the scripture or that sacred text, you're going to be at one point in your life journey, and your understanding of it. And yet, 6 months from now, when you're rereading the scripture, or 10 years from now, when you reread the sacred text, you might be at a different point in your life or your life journey. You now have a different understanding of that same very wisdom. But if we're holding on to the profound insight that occurs to us the first time we read it, we're not going to be able to reap the benefits of anything we could bring to the reading 10 years down the road. So the Buddha isn't saying let go of the wisdom. He's asking us to let go of what made the wisdom mean a certain point in our life. Charles Fillmore said, thoughts are things, and they're also energy. They occupy space in the mental field. A healthy state of the mind is attained and continued when thinking willingly let it go old thoughts. Notice the word willingly. It's not saying kicking and screaming, letting go of old thoughts. Willingly let go of old thoughts and take on the new ones. There must be a renunciation of letting go of old thoughts before the new can find a place in the consciousness, living old thoughts over and over again. Keeps the inlet of the new thoughts closed. Isn't that an interesting way of looking at it? So, we're actually blocking the flow when we hold on desperately to those old thoughts and beliefs and stories. So now, how do we do this? There's three questions that I found that is helpful if I'm questioning whether it's time for me to let go of this belief or the stories. For clarity, anytime I use thoughts or beliefs, you can interject story. First question, is this a belief or thought or story helping me to rationalize doing something I said or wouldn't do? I said I wouldn't do something, but I'm letting the old story help me to break my promise? Question two, this is just the revise of the first. Is the belief of the thoughts or story helping me to make an excuse for not doing something I said I would do? Third, does this belief or thought or story make someone else wrong? In my current belief or thought or story meets any of these criteria, it's time to let it go. Dr. David Williamson says, we can release in a positive and freeing way by following these five steps. Excuse me. Number one, recognizing it, facing it, letting it go, replacing it with something better and healthier, and make restitution whenever and wherever possible. That brings us to our movie of the week, Up. Up is a story of Carl and Ellie Fredrickson. These are childhood sweethearts who dream of adventure in faraway places. I could tell you that the first 5 minutes of the movie is one of the most romantic love stories ever put on film. Their dream is to go to Paradise Falls in South America. After a long and loving life together, Ellie dies before they reach their dream. Carl is on the verge of being forced to go into a nursing home. So he decides to go to Paradise Falls on his own. He is a balloon salesman, and so he attaches thousands of balloons to his house, and he flies to South America. Unbeknownst to Carl, a young wilderness explorer named Russell has become a stowaway in the house. He was on the porch knocking on the door when the house took off. One of his jobs was to help an old person. That's how he got his badge. And he flew to South America with Carl. Together, they encountered a large, exotic bird that Russell named Kevin, and a dog was named Doug, who can talk thanks to this aid of a collar. They eventually find Carl and Ellie's childhood hero, the explorer Charles Mintz, who's still living in his blimp, the spirit of adventure, in search of this elusive monster bird. Carl is initially thrilled to meet Mintz, his childhood hero, but soon realized that Mintz is not really a good guy. He has become attached, and we might say obsessed, with finding this bird. And then he realized the bird he's been trying to find is Russell's beloved Kevin. In escaping from the former idol, Carl is forced to look at his life and his love and let go of his past in order to find his future. The movie has got everything. It's a love story, it's a fantasy, it's a comedy, and it's an adventure. And it's also an incredible example of how important it is for us to be willing to release our stuff and our past. Even some of the most closely held beliefs, when they no longer serve us. When Ellie died, we see that Carl's life has become about maintaining her memory. And specifically, he wants to keep the house the way they built it together, exactly as she left it, including the two chairs where they always sat. He sits in his chair and constantly paging through their adventure book. He always stopped at the page that says, "Stuff I'm going to do." Carl and Ellie had repeatedly tried to save money for their trip to Paradise Falls. They had a big jar and they would fill it with coins. But then stuff kept happening. They had to spend the money on which Carl caused a lot of grief. Charles Mintz had his own grief because he had been humiliated by his peers, and when he came home decades before and said, "I found the great bird," and brought the skeleton, his peers accused him of lying. They caused him to become very angry and resentful and basically said, "I'll show you. I'll find that bird," which explains his obsession. And then there's Russell and Doug. Russell is curious about everything, and Doug, the dog, loves everyone. When he first meets Carl, he leaps on him like the fashion of dogs do and says, "I just met you, and I love you." So we're starting to see the juxtaposition of the fresh, untainted eyes and openness that Russell and Doug brings to the world, and the attachments and the suffering of Carl and Mr. Mintz. So Carl just tunes out everything he doesn't want to hear. Sounds familiar? You might say that makes me really uncomfortable, I don't want to look at that. Or wait a minute, I believe something else. And if I look at that, I might have to open my mind, right? Well, Carl doesn't want to do that, and he just ignores Russell, even when Russell is trying to tell him there's a real dangerous storm heading their way. As we move through the movie, we see that the relationship between Carl and Russell deepening. There was a great sweet scene where Russell shares how much he misses his father. His parents were divorced, and his father had become absent. He relates to a time when they used to go and get ice cream, and they would sit on a curb, and they would count the different color cars. He said, "I really like that curb. It might sound boring, but I keep thinking it's the boring stuff that I remember the most." Their developing friendship hits a little bit of a glitch when Carl breaks the promise to protect Kevin. At that point, Muntz has captured Kevin and has set Carl and Ellie's house on fire. But instead of letting go of the house and going off to save Kevin, Carl saves the house and let Kevin get captured by Muntz. Russell is very disillusioned by this, is very hurt by this, and we see how deep Carl's attachment is so that the house and is the past. I'll say that again. We see how deep Carl's attachment is to the house and to his past. If we look at the three questions I shared earlier, he had promised to protect Kevin, but his story is about the house, and his stories about Ellie made him break his promise to Russell. Russell has left to save Kevin, leaving Carl sitting alone in his chair, as always right beside Ellie's empty chair. He once again picks up her adventure book, as he has done countless times before. He's looking through the now tattered pages, and he gets to that page where he always stops, the one he says, "Things I'm going to do." He always assumes that the book was blank after that page, but this time his finger caught the next page, and he captured a glimpse of a picture. It's a picture he's never noticed before. And as he turns the page, he sees the wedding picture. He keeps turning the pages, and he sees Ella has demonstrated their entire life together. On that very last page, it's a picture of Ellie in her chair, gazing out their window. And she's written these words, "Thank you for the adventure. Now go out and find a new one." In that moment, Carl sees that his life with Ellie was the adventure. It wasn't all the things that they didn't do. It was the incredible life that they had together. Every flat tire, every broken leg, every tree that had fell on the roof, this is what Ellie had always understood. And now Carl did too. So now the new perspective on his life and his past, he set out to rescue Russell, who has grabbed a bunch of balloons to get out and rescue Kevin. But the balloons have lost air, and the house is now too heavy. Show the clip. I love that scene because when he throws out that one chair, something clicks. And he looks at that, like he looks at how the attached he has been to the house and the stuff in it, and to what he thought his life was with Ellie should have looked like. When they did that shot of those two chairs there on that cliff, it was such a powerful and poignant demonstration of him finally letting go. Did you notice how he cheered when the house took off? That's how light we feel when we can let go, when each of us let go. Carl could not start his new adventure. It wasn't a metaphor in the movie. It was real. He couldn't go off and rescue Russell until he literally let go of every single thing in that house. The movie invites us to ask ourselves, what are we holding on to? What are we attached to? What beliefs or fears or profound insights are actually holding us back? Is there something from our past that's preventing us from moving forward? Is there a story that we're holding on to that is preventing us from being fully present? Bhagavan Shahi Rajneesh taught, there's only one courage, and that's the courage to go on dying to the past, not to collect it, not to accumulate it, and not to cling to it. We all cling to the past, and because we cling, we become unavailable to the present. I remember a story by a colleague, Reverend B. Arlene. She tells about a time when she was going to go-karting with her nephew. She realized as she was getting into the cart, wow, these things actually go really fast. And she got really nervous. So she was driving the cart with one foot on the accelerator and one foot on the brake. As she began getting a little bit more confidence, she was putting more pressure on the accelerator, but she still wasn't going very fast. And finally, one of the attendants yelled at her and said, "Take your foot off the brake." And at that moment, she had an epiphany. She said, "It was that's when I realized I've been pushing the accelerator down harder and harder and harder, but I still hadn't taken my foot off the brake yet. The fear that first made me conscious had become unconscious and was effectively keeping me going slower than I wanted to, despite my efforts of accelerating. Needless to say, once I took my foot off the brake, I immediately had access to the full power of the accelerator. Once Carl let go of the attachment to the past, he had that lift he needed to literally fly into a new adventure. The power of release invites us to look at our lives and beliefs and ask us, where is our foot on the brake? Where are we still holding on to the past? Are we willing to forgive when we need to? Are we willing to look at our thoughts, beliefs, opinions, stories, and let go of those things that no longer serve our highest good personally? We don't have to deny or ignore the past to be fully present to the future, but we do not have to let it go. And let go of what we made the past mean. We get to be more like Russell and Doug, the dog, the little boy and the talking dog, who are curious about everything that we've loved, and we love everyone. At that very end of the movie, as the house floated away, Carl looked at it, and you could see that the transformation was complete because he said, "It's just a house." And it's a wonderful twist when we finally let it go. The house resting right beside Paradise Falls, when Carl and Ellie had always dreamed of going. There are many lessons in the movie, but the biggest one that I take away is that life is an adventure. Life that we're actually living when we can stop and see it in a different way. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If you would like to support this podcast, you may do so at uscabq.org.